Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, Reptile Radio fans, and welcome to the March 1st, 2015 episode of the show that keeps your reptile flow flowing and your reptile know-how growing. The award-winning formula that is the Double R Reptile Radio. This is your host, CK, reminding all of our listeners that it isn't always what you say, but how you say it that matters most. So just because you're answering a classified ad offering a fine-looking donkey for sale, it doesn't mean you should call up and say, "Hi, I want your beautiful ass." Speak wisely, my friends. In recent BLBC news, things are finally starting to heat up at the 2014 Forum of the Year, as the winter doldrums are seemingly easing their grip on our humble community. So if you haven't been out from under your blanket since December, make sure to do so now, and check out all the cool new stuff going on at the Bush League Breeders Club. You'll not be sorry if you do. Congratulations to our Canadian friend Keith Beaton on his recent promotion to Bush League Lieutenant, and to Bruce Dellis of Twin Cities Reptiles on reaching the rank of Captain on our boards. Folks that contribute their time and experience help to make our forum the best there is, and I just wanted to personally thank you guys for your respective contributions. This week's guest hails from the beautiful Tampa Bay area of the Sunshine State, and even just saying that makes me wish I was back on Clearwater Beach right now. Michael Friedman of the Florida Reptile Ranch is serious about his bull python collection, and just one visit to his immaculate and well-organized website will give you that feeling as well. So get ready for some good old-fashioned bull talk, boys and girls, and help me welcome Michael Friedman to the Reptile Radio microphone for his maiden voyage over the Double R waves. Hey, Michael.
Hi, CK. How's it going?
Hey, man. I'm doing all right, even though I just looked outside and it's snowing. I can't take it anymore, man.
Oh, it's pretty crappy outside here today.
Yeah.
Didn't get very many bad days in Arizona, but today's one of the dozen.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's funny because I was talking to Robin Markland off air last week after we did our show, and he told me, he said that the weather across the country has been horrendous, and, you know, he kind of knows that from Ship Your Reptiles, you know, how people are having problems everywhere, and he said this is the worst year ever, and I totally believe that. So now, Michael, I mean, I know you've listened to some shows in the past, and you know that, you know, people's first time on, you got to give us your How I Got Into Reptiles story. So if we can get started with that, that would be great.
Sure. First, I'd like to say I wish I could be as cool in real life as you sound during that introduction. You on the radio at the beginning there, it's just sweet sounding.
Oh, thanks, man. That's really nice.
Originally, I got into reptiles when I was a kid. My mom's an animal lover. We would catch, like, black racers and garter snakes out in the yards and stuff and keep them for a day or two. And then I kind of graduated on to buying I think my first actual purchase was a Miami Phase corn snake at just the local pet store in Tampa, in Brandon, Tampa area. And that grew on into, you know, everything. I mean, that was probably when I was 12 years old, and after that, you know, my dad didn't like snakes, so my mom was kind of like, we were kind of hiding a snake in the room, and we were telling him it was a lizard, and then I'd get more and more, and finally, after years went by, he got comfortable enough, but my dad would never go in my bedroom, but, you know, I bought every dollar I had, I spent on snakes and lizards, and I bought iguanas and frogs and monitor lizards, and transformed my whole bedroom into basically a zoo. I had a heater in my room. My room was like 85 degrees year-round. And, you know, like, my relatives would come over, and they'd be afraid to go even, like, that side of the house because I had so many snakes and lizards and frogs and stuff. And so that was really it. You know, my room was just covered with posters and books. And thinking about the time I got to we were about 14 or 15. I think we started going to the reptile shows. That was back when the reptile show in Florida, the big one was in Orlando, the Wayne Hill show. And so we'd get rides over to Orlando from, you know, my uncle or my friend's mom, and we'd go out there and see everything and just be blown away. That was back in the days when there were basically no ball pythons at the show. And there, you know, the Orlando show was five rooms, and you can walk around all day long and barely get to see any, you know, everything there. Wow. So that was kind of like really changed my life, going to the shows and seeing like everything in real life in the books. And I really wanted to be a herpetologist and reptile breeder when I was probably like 12 to 15, 16, 17 years old. And so I think I got, about the time I got a car, you know, we would get rides from our friends, from our parents and aunts and uncles and stuff to the local reptile pet stores in town. You know, like I mentioned on my website, I worked at a place called the Snake Pit, so I'd go in there for years before I could drive and tell the manager, Scott, or the owner, you know, Aaron, and say, when I turn 16, I want to work here. And I'll do that, you know, every month for 2 years, and I finally got a car. I went in when I was 16 years old and said, my car's outside, I'm ready to work. And they said, you're on. So they hired me, and that's when I really got a lot of experience handling, you know, all kinds of reptiles out there, because Snake Pit, we had everything from full-grown crocodile monitors to 23-foot Burmese pythons and anacondas. You know, we had everything in that place, and it was a lot of fun working there.
Oh, that's a dream come true for a kid. You know, look, I'm like 15 years older than you, so as I, you know, as I listen to your story, I think, oh man, this kid was so lucky to be able to go to a reptile show. You know, there was no reptile shows when I was a kid. You know, it just didn't exist. And
right.
And like my dream was kind of always sounded very similar to yours, except that, you know, you having the benefit of living in Florida was tremendous because you could actually go out and field herp every day.
Yep.
And I grew up on the beach in on Long Island in New York, and man, there was no herping here, you know. So
yeah,
it was
beautiful in a different way, but no herping, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it was you know, all that is just, it's so cool how people around the country just have such markedly different stories, and we still kind of all manage to end up in this same pot at the end, you know. And it's a lot of fun to hear these, and this is why I kind of continue to do these. I know Larry used to do them, and I thought they were great, and I think it's really cool, and that's a good story. And of course, the Snake Pit was a really popular place. Now, is that still open?
No, you know, it's changed ownership a few times, and then I think somewhere around like in the early 2000s, it finally went out of business. It was actually bought by an exotic dancer who kind of liked snakes or something like that, and once that happened, it started going downhill, and then she sold it to, I think, like an English guy, and it lasted another year or two, and it was gone. I think they started getting in some trouble, like tax stuff or something, I don't know. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I was there. It was like the reptile spot in the Tampa Bay area, and I think that was Herp Hobby Shop, which is still around there.
Yeah, well, there was one in St. Pete's also. What was the name of the one in St. Petersburg?
The one in, like, the Oldsmar area was Herp Hobby Shop. St. Pete, I'm not sure what was over there.
Okay.
You know, I was young. I didn't drive out that way too often when I was 16 years old.
Yeah. Well, it's beautiful down there, man. And part of me envies that you get to go back to that after you're done with school. Now you're currently in Arizona attending med school?
Yep, I am actually in naturopathic medical school, which is, I'm sure nobody knows what that means. So it's a four-year program just like conventional medical school, but we also study alternative forms of medicine, and we tend to use prescription medications almost never.
Beautiful. I love the sound of that, and for all my listeners out there that, you know, if you're considering going on any kind of stuff, man, definitely look into homeopathic or naturopathics before you consider any kind of pharmaceutical stuff. It's always a good angle to check out first. So now let's get back to
some... It's a lot more work, so people don't like it as much usually.
Yeah, because it involves doing some of your own work.
Right, that's right.
Yeah.
Not a magic pill.
Nope, but it's great because it is the magic pill in a different uniform. Now, listen, man. Now, so you got into herpetoculture, and at some point you transitioned from being a kid with stuff to like moving out, I guess, and you know, getting your own thing. So give us a little bit about how that got going, and if this was the beginning of this business that you started, or you were just, it was still transitioning in between.
Well, yeah, no, I think when I was about finishing up towards the end of high school, I think my senior year, I really started getting into girls and going out and partying and stuff like that. And I remember actually like the turning point was a freak accident. When I was working at Snake Pit, I had gotten really sick one day just like while at work, and I was almost like fainting and passing out, and they had to call my parents to come pick me up because I couldn't drive home.
Wow.
I must have just had a bad flu or mono or something like that, and they took me home. And at the time, it was, you know, Florida is usually, even in the wintertime, it's usually 80 degrees outside. but we can have a cold snap just really quickly. And I had all of my animals outside. I think we had replaced the carpets in the house or something like that. So our whole back patio was just filled with cages. And I literally slept for like 36 hours and didn't wake up. And all my animals were outside, and a cold front came through and killed like 80% of all of them.
Oh.
And, you know, like I still actually have nightmares about that to this day, as does my mom, because she's such an animal lover. But they were so concerned about me, like they weren't checking the news and worrying about that. So, you know, all my animals died pretty much. I had a handful of things that I gave to a buddy who owned a reptile pet store in Sefner called Scales. And then, you know, I just didn't have any reptiles anymore, and I graduated and went to college, and, you know, I knew a guy when I was younger who took care of my reptiles. His name is Dr. Richard Funk. He's kind of a popular, like, you know, herp vet. And he was kind of my idol growing up, and he said he couldn't make any money in herpetology, so he had to go back to veterinary school and become a vet on top of it.
Okay.
So, you know, like, thinking about that, I was raised with, you know, we're pretty well off, and I wanted to be able to take care of my family when I had one. And, you know, I worked at some vet offices, and I didn't really like what I saw, because they're kind of excited to get those animals in that were like hit by a car or attacked by another dog, something exciting where they didn't have to do spays and neuters all day, which is a lot of times what vets do. And I just didn't like that environment. I didn't really want to think that way. So I got out of animals completely and went into business, and I went to Florida State for a business degree and real estate degree. And then I did that. I graduated and went into commercial real estate appraisal, commercial real estate brokerage. I did a lot of residential and commercial investing. And that's kind of how we got a lot of seed money to do other things. And I met my wife, who I went to high school with, back when I was about 29, 5 or 6 years ago. And we decided just to go back into the science and health field. And, you know, I said, I'm going to go into naturopathic medicine, and she's going to go and be an acupuncturist and a Chinese medicine doctor. And we
cool.
did that. So over the last 5 years, you know, we've been working towards that. We had a family, and, you know, a lot of, you know, I'm in some other businesses, and my real estate stuff really did well, and my businesses did well. And we're just to a point where I had a, you know, warehouse here in town, and I had all this extra office space. And I was like, you know what? I think I want to get back into owning some reptiles, because you know, I still love them. I still look at stuff from time to time. And so we started looking around, and I was like, you know, I want a monitor again, or I want a python again. And I looked online, and I'm like, holy cow, there's like 500 different ball python morphs. There's this website called World Ball Python, and there's like 5,000 freaking animals on here. So, you know, I saw the prices of them, and I was like, you know what? I talked to my wife. I said, this might actually be a way where I can get it back into reptiles again, and maybe we can put some of our money into it and do it as business. So my wife's very supportive. She said, definitely, if that's what you want to do. So I made some phone calls around to some, you know, breeders that I saw advertising on your site, and World of Ball Pythons, and, you know, surprisingly, a lot of these people didn't call me back. And,
really?
You know, I didn't really understand that. So, yeah, so that was, like, really a big part in the decision to go forward with it, because I was calling these guys who were, you know, saying, you know, call me and I'll help you out into being a breeder. And there's like the big ones advertising, and no one was calling me back. And I was like, you know what? I think there's room here for somebody with good customer, you know, customer communication skills to actually call
sure.
customers back when they want to give them some money. So we were like, you know, let's go ahead and do it. I think there's room for us in the market.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's crazy. Because I hear stories like that from people, like occasional stories, but the fact that you were trying to get your game on, and, you know, I mean, clearly at that point, I know what that point feels like when you finally decide you're jumping back in. And it's like, you, at that point, you're making a lot of calls, you know, because you're trying to get stuff that you want to get from the guys that have it. And for them to, like, ignore your calls or, you know, not return a call is crazy in my book. I mean, if somebody calls me for a normal, I call them back, you know, it's crazy. I can't even
receive
that.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why I ended up doing so much business with the Barkers. And then Brian Barkcheck, I mean, those two called me back immediately. They answered a million questions. They would text me back and forth any time, day or night. And then I ended up giving them a large, I mean, they got a lot of business from me. And the guys who I called who didn't call me back, they're kicking themselves in the butt because they lost, I mean, you know, I've spent considerable amount of money in the ball python market.
Sure. Sure. I mean, look, anybody that's on the Bush League Breeders Club boards knows that Mike's got a phenomenal collection. And, of course, anybody that's not can always just go to his website and see some of the representations on there and his gallery of animals. And they're beautiful, beautiful examples. And there's some high-ticket morphs in there.
Yeah,
well, it's true, man. Besides that, they're nice examples of what they are. You also have some really high-ticket morphs on there. So, I mean, that just tells. I mean, the person who knows this game knows that you spent a considerable amount of equity getting into this project. So, I admire that, and I admire that you respect it the way you do, because clearly, like, there's a level of. When you speak about it, I can hear that you respect your animals and that you respect this opportunity, and that's nice. And I'm glad you're feeling that this is something good for you, because it's good to have good guys in the business. I wish I could just, I mean, look, I'm not the barometer for who's good and who's not, but I wish that there were no bad stories about breeders out there.
Yeah, me too. I've only come across one guy who really was not that polite. There were a few people that didn't call me back, but. Everyone else that I've spoken to has been really great in the industry. Everyone I've met from the board at shows or whatever, 98% of people I've met in the reptile world are really great people. And, a lot of them are just enthusiasts and hobbyists like myself. Like I said, this is what I wanted to do when I was a kid. And, being in a place where I can finally do that and take care of my family and be comfortable is, really just a blessing.
Yeah, that's the cherry on the pie, man. I like the sound of that. Now, So you were in real estate before this. Yeah, you would had a degree in business from the sound of it,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you developed the capital to get going into this. So it's not I like to hear that story too, because sometimes, and I mean Mike, from somebody who didn't kind of really know you too well until I saw you suddenly appearing on the boards with all these creatures. You always have that question in your head: is this some little rich kid who's just spoiled and spending daddy's money? And I think there's a stigma about that, because there have been guys like that in the past where you've seen them just show up with, like, suddenly they've got the greatest and latest and greatest stuff, and it's like, this guy's never bred anything, So,
right.
Like, have you had to deal with that stigma? Have you had to explain that to people that, hey, you know what, I worked for this man.
People do ask me that sometimes, and. Even meeting people like from the forums on shows, they're like, oh man, I thought you'd be this short little fat rich kid spending all daddy's money. And I really just take it as a compliment. I think it's funny. And I think it's really just a compliment that I can do it on my own. And people think that most people, get money like this or win the lottery or whatever people think. But, I know I've put the hard work in and I have that sweat equity into my businesses and my income. So it's all good. It's, like I said, I think it's a compliment.
No, and it's, look, if you've been around long enough, you realize that life is how you look at it. And if you could take somebody's comment that could potentially be a negative comment, turn it into a positive comment, process it internally as a compliment, which is what you do, okay? Man, you win fans that way. That's how you win fans, because, people's perception of you is based on your response to their initial feelings about you, So I kind of like that you operate that way, and that's, look, the fact that you're into homeopathic medicine and that your wife's into Eastern medicine makes you makes me a fan of yours already, because I know that the type of mindset that prevails in people, like, who are willing to go against the establishment because they know something is better, and it's hard because, like, look, you get laughed at sometimes. I'm sure they're like, "What are you talking about, man? You're not going to press here and make that feel better, But the truth is, it works, and there's a certain amount of faith to try to actually take the steps to process that information and move forward in that regard. And clearly, you have faith in your ability, and you have faith in some common sense. And I like the sound of that. So. All good to know.
Yeah,
man.
If you want to be successful in anything, you got to have a positive attitude and some faith in your beliefs. And, I think that's with any of the reptiles or medicine or whatever your chosen field is.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? Very few people walk the walk. They can talk about it, but you're putting it out there, and I really like the sound of that. So, and again, this is my opinion, folks. Mike could be a total you know, whatever you think he is. But I like the guy, and I just barely started to know him. So anyway, no, Mike, seriously, though, now you have a lot of great projects, okay? Now, what are you really juiced about? I mean, there's so many cool things on your website. I'm kind of juiced about almost everything you got going over there. But, like, what really gets Mike out of bed in the morning?
You know, right now, I have a trio of scaleless heads. I'm really excited about those. I think that's a great morph just because it can be plugged into everything, and you know for the most part what it's going to look like. Whereas a lot of other stuff, sometimes it's kind of risky. You know, you want to mix this with that. You don't know what it's going to look like. You think it's going to be great, but maybe it comes out and it wasn't what you expected, and then you just wasted that, you know, couple of years on the project. And you know, because it's not something just eye-catching to you or something you want to work with. But I think scaleless heads are easy to guess what the outcome is going to look like. It's going to be prettier and sharper and, you know, more vibrant. I also have, you know, a lot of other stuff, too. I got the Super Bongo, which is really cool. I think only Brian Barkchek has another one of those in the country. So I know he's producing some bongo stuff, and hopefully we'll get some Super Bongo stuff out in the next season or two. You know, the bamboo stuff. I have a bunch of sunset stuff. I have an Enchi head sunset male and like 6 head sunset females. So I'm really want to work that red orange color in a lot of stuff. You know, I could see some ultra male sunsets in the future or something like that.
You know what? I don't know if you caught recently. I just put a link up to Kevin's Odium thing. Have you seen the Odium yet?
I did see the Odium. Looks pretty nice.
Now, I'm thinking getting some orange into that is going to be insane.
I think you're right. I think getting orange into anything is insane just because it's a color we don't have a lot of in the ball python market right now.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, the stuff he had in that little video that they put up, man, I can see putting orange in that stuff and just watching that explode even further because that's some crazy-looking stuff. I mean, now... You know, you touched on the scaleless heads briefly there, and I mean, I've done shows on scaleless heads, and I got a, you know, little decent backlog of information in my brain about them that I process when I talk about them. But you didn't even mention the fact that they're scaleless, which I thought was pretty cool, because you're looking at them from the color aspect of it, you know, and the pattern aspect of it. You didn't even mention that they're going to be scaleless.
Yeah, you know, I think that's just a kind of different thing, and some people like it and some people don't, but with the, you know, the color, like the sharpness, it's like getting a snake in high definition. I think I heard someone say high def snake, that no one can say that they don't prefer the colors on a scaleless snake, you know?
Yeah, I just, you know what, just an aside, I found it pretty interesting that was the focus, and I didn't prompt you to say anything, that's what came out of your mouth. And
right.
I think for a lot of people, you know, they're thinking about the scaleless as, okay, it's a scaleless snake, and they're thinking about scaleless corns, and they're thinking about scaleless rat snakes, and, you know, and in my head, I'm thinking, oh, man, yeah, it's gonna be scaleless, but just like yourself, but the colors and the pattern and the lack of noise and the brilliance is going to be the really, really amazing part. And
fading.
It's the lack of fading. I mean, you know, all that stuff, all the melanin and all the dulling, I mean, that happens on the scale level. So when you clear that, basically that junk away, you know, if you're color oriented anyway, if you clear that junk that the scales represent away, man, those things are going to be beautiful forever. Let's hope.
I know. Can you imagine a sunset with no scales, or the super cypress with no scales?
My goodness. Yeah. Now, these bongos, like, what do you, in your head, okay, you got the bongos already, and I mean, it's a pretty cool morph in itself. Now, what's, if you don't mind talking about, like, what projects you're thinking of put it in, what are you leaning towards with that?
With stuff like the Super Bongo and the Super Cypress is another gene I'm really excited about. It's kind of a, in my opinion, looks a lot like the Super Bongo. I think, you know, they share an allele, they're on the same allele. I think the Super Cypress is a little bit more appealing to me personally. But, you know, with snakes like that I think I would just want to start off. I've already bred the Cypress to, like, lessers and butters and things that won't alter the pattern too much, but will just kind of, you know, lighten the snake or bring out a little bit different colors. So I don't it's such a beautiful super that I don't really want to mess with it that much at first. I don't want to put an Enchi in there or a spider in there that's going to change the pattern or anything like that, because that stripe with the disappearing pattern down the sides is just like, you know, it's, we don't have another snake that looks like that. And yeah. So I just want to start off slow and lightly start changing the colors and see what happens, see if I can get the sides even lighter or the top even darker or lighter and go from there.
Okay.
But
well,
eventually,
I like
you
that.
Know, I'll put it in everything eventually. I love just about every morph. I really like the colored morphs. Like, I love like what the patterns of Super Enchis, and I love the colors of Ultramels and what Ultramel does to things like, you know, the Pied or the Ultra Lesser or the Ultra Bamboo that Noah claims he made. I mean, I see things like that, and I want to, you know, mix those with everything because it just makes stuff so beautiful. So, you know, I'm trying to build up my Ultramels and to breed the Super Bamboos with and the Scaleless and stuff like that. I think there's just some snakes that have really cool colors and some that have really cool patterns, and I just want to mix them all with each other and see what happens.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, man. And you know, you do have some phenomenal pattern stuff to work with there, so you might as well enjoy it. And it's nice because you're doing, you know, everything you've said so far, you're doing the projects you want to do.
Oh, yeah.
So I like
sure.
the sound of that.
Yeah, I have a lot of obsessive stuff we're doing, too, which, you know, sometimes isn't always the most popular seller because you can't make that quick money on it, but it's more of a long-term steady investment. But we have a lot of like double recessive stuff, like black exanthic pieds, or lavender albino ultramels. We do the lavender snows, you know, attach some of those out. We also have some triple het stuff, like a lavender albino exanthic genetic stripe, which I think is going to make a beautiful snake. And even if you don't hit that trio, you still get striped lavender albinos or striped exanthics or snow lavender snows. And you know, the possibilities for a snake like that is just really amazing.
Yeah, there's something about a clutch where, like, when there's eight babies there and none of them look the same. You know, I really like that, too. It's kind of the lottery mentality kind of thing where you roll the dice, you know, and just see what the heck comes out. But
Nick's bad.
I really like that. That is really cool. So, no, you know what? I mean, I'm doing some double head stuff here, and right now my only double head things. Well, I have a couple of. I had some double head stuff, but one of them was caramel, and I'm not pursuing that anymore. But I got the double head clown and desert ghost going. And
oh wow, that's going to be a cool looking snake. That's one I'm kind of really, really big on right now, the desert ghost. I'm just seeing so many cool snakes with the desert ghost gene in it.
Oh yeah, I mean
I'm a big fan of that one right now.
It's crazy, you know how that looks, and I'm sure the Bell's done it. I don't recall seeing one, but I'm sure it's going to be really, really crazy, and that's it's always good. I mean, look, if you're an enthusiast, okay, yeah, breed what you like and what you want to see, but man, put a couple of those crazy projects. You know, they're always on the back burner because they seem to take forever. You know. But put a couple of them on there and really, like, have something to look forward to because it does keep you juiced at times when – and, you know, you really haven't been doing it long enough to hit that doldrum, you know. And if people do this, I mean, I see them, like, get tired once in a while, you know. And I talk to a lot of people, as you would imagine, you know, who are in this gig, and they hit a wall and they're like, oh, man, I just got to get – I'm just not excited about it. But you know, you put a project like that on your plate where you know it's going to be a 4 or 5 year gig, and you're like, well, I got to stay pumped, man. I got 4 more years of this, you know. So it's kind of cool to have the carrot out in front of you like that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And with recessives, for some reason I like a lot of recessive projects. I just think there's so many great ones out there, and I don't know, I guess we just don't see them as much because they take longer to do. But I mean, Sunset and Ultramel and Lavender Albino and Clowns. And I mean, these are all just like best of the best, in my opinion.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, man. It sounds cool now. All right, so we just talked about looking into the future a little. So now, where do you see your business, let's say, 5 years from now?
You know, we're going to be moving back to Florida in just about 6 months or so. I'm graduating med school and we're moving back home where we're both from. Both of our families are there. And our plan is to buy a lot of land and build a house. And, you know, ideally I would like to have enough land. I mean, I want a bunch of land, but I want to build a building on my property away from the house so I can do all my snake stuff there. And we really want to expand as far as this business goes. You know, I love a lot of reptiles and amphibians. And when we get back, and I'm in limited space now, and I don't have time to be there every day to feed lizards and stuff like that, frogs. But when we move home, I just want to have like an animal farm and have, you know, expand the ball pythons so I can have, you know, enough to make everything I want to make. I want to get into a lot of other snakes as well. I really love monitor lizards. I love geckos. I love tortoises. One of my buddies is buying up a bunch of radiated tortoises right now, so I'll probably get into that. And, you know, another one of my buddies in Florida breeds the sailfin lizard, the sailfin dragons.
Yeah, those are cool.
Things you don't see very often, but the Hydrosaurus, the Pustulatus, those are just like, you know, they're 4 foot long with a 8-inch sail on their back, and they're purple and blue. It's just, you know,
blows
me away.
Yeah, they're like Dimetrodons, man.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if, you know,
it's like the closest thing you can get to your own dinosaur.
Yeah, yeah, for anybody who's into dinosaurs, man. I mean, you know, some people don't even know those exist because they're really not popular in the pet trade, but that is one cool-looking lizard, man.
It is a very cool-looking lizard. So I just want to breed a lot of stuff. You know, I just enjoy keeping those animals, even if I don't breed a lot of them. I just want to own more reptiles, and I want to go, you know, do some shows and not be the guy with just ball pythons at the table because, you know, when I used to go to shows a lot when I was a kid, there weren't even barely any ball pythons in the whole show, and you'd walk around and see the coolest, weirdest stuff, and, you know, now it's 70% ball pythons, 10%, 15% of boas, and there's hardly anything else. So you walk around, and once in a while, you'll see a monkey-tailed skink, and you're like, oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah,
I remember those.
Yeah, that's
so I
want to
have all that
memory
stuff
lane.
Just on my one table.
Yeah, yeah, well, you know what? I mean, the hydrosaurs are cool as heck. Where are those from?
Philippines, Indonesia.
Really? Oh, that's really cool.
So, yeah, they don't really export those anymore, so they're just a couple guys in the whole country, I think, breed them, and they're kind of hard to get, and there's a waiting list for them and everything, so I've already go ahead and put myself on that waiting list.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And, you know, for so many reasons, but I would love to see some of these foreign markets open up their doors a little bit and just let some fresh genetics in. Because, you know, ultimately, if your real concern is saving any species, you want to put it in the hands of hobbyists, is my feeling. And, man, it would be really nice if like, we could take that homegrown stock that's limited here, add in some fresh import blood, you know, just to, you know, loosen up the genetics a little bit and really, really let stuff like that take off. You know, it would be nice if there was somebody in government somewhere that would, like, open up their brains to understand that.
That's too forward-thinking, you know, for government.
Yeah, well, I'm with you on that. I'm with you 100%. You know, it's so stifling.
Yeah, there's
so stifling.
Many regulations, like even CITES and stuff like that. We can't, you know, the U.S. won't allow us to import them because they're, you know, CITES regulated. And, you know, you can have an animal like the Fiji Island iguana or something that's on the brink of extinction, and they won't let us take a couple and start breeding them in captivity.
Yeah,
pretty crazy.
Which is blind and stupid. And clearly, you know, I mean, the most egregious fault of CITES is that, you know, you can import 10,000 skins this year, but you can't import 100 live ones, you know.
Right.
So, and there are plenty of animals like that. I think the Argentine boa is like one of those things where, you know, and it just, it's nauseating. But that's, you know, fortunately, common sense has to, you know, you would like to think that common sense would eventually prevail, but it's not gonna. So we really gotta, folks out there, you gotta push people up into government that has a brain, have brains between their ears, because there aren't too many out there now.
Well, that's so why now, I bought the Tracy and Dave Barker's last book and was offering, you know, if anyone bought one from them, I would send it to the person of your choice in government. So maybe, you know, maybe they'd get to read the book and change their attitude a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I remember you were doing that now, and it, you just saying that reminded me of that, because I remember thinking that was a really cool gesture, because, you know, it's a $15 book, but it's priceless, you know, the information that's in there. For someone who has zero knowledge of, unfortunately, of the rules that they're actually creating, you know?
Right.
So,
yeah, that's a good book.
Yeah, that's cool, and I know you have that on your website too, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Just
mostly for some more advertising for them, but I think it's a book that everybody who loves animals should read. Anyone who cares about the environment should read it.
Yeah, I'm with you, brother. Yeah, well, they got a great message. I tried to get Tracy on the show to talk about it after the book, but I guess they were really, really bogged down and busy, and I just couldn't get her on at the time. But, yeah, that would be something that definitely, if my fans out there or fans of the show out there are interested in, man, get the book and just increase your own knowledge. It's a cool idea. So now, well, what other hobbies are you into, man? I don't know about you yet, because I just asked the question, but, as a herb, you always tend to have, peripheral hobbies that kind of go with it and enhance your herping hobby. So what do you got going on?
You know, I'm one of those guys who I really like a lot of things. I'm interested in a lot of things. I've had, I think, 28 jobs in my life. I'm 35, and I've been in school for, 5 years again. So by the time before I was even 30, I had 28 jobs under my belt. So I like to experience different things and try new things. And, I travel a lot. We've been all over the world and most of the states in the country. Obviously, we're really big into health and nutrition and natural medicine. So, taking a big chunk out of my life to become an expert in that field. So we like working out. And being in Arizona, we get out and we hike a lot. I think I've posted on the forums or my Facebook at least, but maybe on the forums too. Last year, I bought a new C7 Stingray Corvette. So I like to buy fast cars and drive those around. I sold that one, and I have a new BMW M4 that's supposed to be delivered this week. So that's my new toy.
Okay.
So I like to buy toys a little bit too.
All right.
But, we do everything. We like to hunt and everything like that.
Yeah, those toys are great when you don't live up here in the Northeast, because your whole car would be in a pothole.
yep. No, I'm sunshine all year round.
Good for you. So now you said you like to hunt too. What do you guys? You guys do a lot of hunting, I guess, in Arizona, or you travel to hunt also?
We did some hunting. I just got into it kind of recently in my life. We did some boar hunting in Florida. Friends of mine, not my wife. And we moved out to Arizona where the hunting, I just do it to get out in the wild, to get out in the wilderness, and to be able to eat healthy meat. I buy organic and grass-fed beef, of course, being a health nut. So we get out there and just try to get some good, healthy, wild game to feed me and my family. And, in Arizona, everyone is a hunter, and I cannot pull a tag out here to save my life. So I've only had the opportunity to hunt a javelina out here, but there's such big game out here that's great to eat, like elk and antelope and deer and all that stuff. So unfortunately, it looks like I may not get an opportunity to do that while I'm here. But, back home we have a lot of hog, and it's really good. You smoke it up, and you can give all the extra stuff to the homeless shelters because they're really like a nuisance animal in Florida. So it's nice to go and just be able to help feed other people with that as well and do something that you think is fun. And so we do that back home, and there's some deer hunting and stuff like that, and a lot of bird hunting in the south.
Cool, man. That's great.
Yeah.
So now, all right, so instead of thinking future now, what do you got cooking this year to come out of your incubator?
Well, I have about 4 or 5 girls about to lay some scaleless head eggs right now. I've already ovulated. I have cypress eggs about to be laid. To get a little bit more specific, it's scaleless head to clown head hypo, head albino. So I have those. Eggs are getting close to dropping.
Nice.
I did do a couple normals with the cypress gene just because no one else has them yet. So it's such a beautiful gene. I don't even want to mix it with stuff. I've done scaleless head to VPI snow that's getting close. I have a lot more lavender albino stuff that's going to hatch this very, very soon. A lot of super pastel, sugar, spot nose stuff. Some het sunset stuff. I won't be able to produce an actual visual sunset until next year. But banana pied stuff. We got a lot of stuff going on. Ultramel lavenders. The female's getting close, so hopefully I can get that done this year too. I want to see an ultramel lavender albino snake.
Yeah, that's that's interesting because I've spoken to Travis about this on the boards. Travis is a splendii on the boards, and he's our resident geneticist and he knows his stuff. And he's under the impression, and I kind of believe him because he knows his business probably better than anybody else on the board. he's under the impression that when you stack those, you know, hypo and amelanistic genes, that you're really not going to get, you're not going to get in. Like in my head, I'm stacking purple, you know, when I'm listening to that breeding that you know with the ultramel in the lab. But he's saying that it's kind of going to mush it out a little bit, you know.
Yeah, I read his opinion on that, and you know, it's like, you know, I can definitely see that could be a possibility. You know, sometimes you mix the lavender albino with something like a pie, and you get this just like surprise of a color, this like bright creamsicle orange thing. So, you know, it's one of those things where I think that no matter what the baby looks like, it's going to be pretty, and it's going to be a powerful snake as well, so you can breed it and then produce lavender albinos and ultramels, that, you know.
Yeah, easily, no, so. I totally agree with you on all of that, everything you just said.
I hope he's wrong, question, because I hope it's more like a closer to ultramel than a lavender albino. But
yes, that's what I was looking for from you. Like, yeah. Did you do it with the? I mean, look, no matter what, you're producing a powerhouse genetic animal, and that goes without saying. But yeah, what were you hoping for? I mean, in my heart, I'm hoping that it's going to be really, really purple, you know, and really, really clean, you know. So I was just, I was curious to hear your take on it.
Yeah, I hope it's like a purpley orange color is what I'm hoping. You know, I hope it just like looks like nothing like we expected. It comes out like a panther chameleon, purple and blue and red, and that would be like my dream ball python right there. I'm still waiting to find that one, but. I mean, realistically, I think it's probably going to be, I hope it's going to be like a more purpley orange color.
Yeah. You know what? I like that you're doing it, you know, because, you know, we've been proven wrong before with these things. I mean, we can read about what we think they're going to be all day long, but until we do the breedings, it just, though you sometimes don't have an idea, so.
Yeah, somebody has to try it, so why not me?
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I'm not, believe me, I put a lot of credence into what Travis says, because he does have the experience to back it up. But there's still something about just actually making them and seeing, because even if it doesn't come out the way you like it, wow, it might come out to be completely unexpected and really blow stuff away. So I think it's going to be cool either way. I love that idea. Now you're also doing clown pieds too this year, aren't you? Did I see that somewhere on the site?
Yeah,
maybe?
I did. I've already bred those together a few times. I think follicles aren't too big yet. I think they're sitting at 18 or 20. But the looks like they're going to go this year. So hopefully get some clown pieds in there. Not too many of those around. And, you know, it's just another powerful snake. I mean, who doesn't want to mix everything with a pied or a clown? And you'll have it in one snake.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's definitely on my want list of things to do, too. My pied girl is at, I only have one homozygous pied girl at she's at BT's house this year, and he's hopefully doing a banana pied breeding this year. So, I mean, I want to get going with that, because I think that the banana pieds are crazy. You know, those leopard pieds, oh my God, those are crazy.
Oh,
when you
put
banana in those.
Beautiful.
I mean, stunning stuff. So there's a lot to be done with that still, and you know, or at least expanded on. I mean, people have done it, so we got a taste, you know. But I think you want to expand them, and you want to, you know, try to fine tune them to see what the best combos are, and then make a bunch, because I'm sure they'll sell.
Oh yeah,
beautiful.
For sure. When I bought the Sunsets, I went through World of Ball Pythons and tried to find the most orange and most red snakes, and I went and bought those up to breed with Sunset to hopefully increase those colors.
Yeah.
So like I bought
the
Red Devil from Outback Reptiles, which is a super red stripe, genetic stripe. And especially as a baby, that thing was really bright red. So,
yeah, that's going to be nice on the Sunset. I think that's going to be a situation where you're going to stack the genes, but they're going to show that they're stacked.
Right.
They're not hypo or amelanistic. I mean, it's not going to cause a reduction. It should in my head cause them to ramp up. And man, you're going to get some nice red. I think there is a picture of your Red Devil on your site, right? I thought I saw it on there.
Yeah, it's on there. I think I really need to update that gallery. I have so many cool snakes that aren't on there.
Oh, get them on there, man. Now we got about 2 minutes left, and I like that you mentioned the Red Devil, because and that's I have the red stripe currently going this year to. A pastel lesser girl. It's really nice at my buddy Scott Wysocki's house, and I'm thinking that's going to
be nice.
Really sweet. Yeah, and then for next year, at my my pastel G stripe girl should be ready to go. She's big enough now, but I'm going to give her another year. So it's all that. I think that's a project that still has a lot of tapping to do. But bro, believe it or not, we got like a minute left.
That went by fast.
Yeah. You want to say hi to anybody before we blow?
Yeah, you know, I'd just like to say thank you to all the people who've supported me along the journey. Of course, my wife and my family, me putting in some extra time at the office to take care of snakes and make sure everything's being run right. And, you know, Tracy Barker and Brian Barkchak have really been, just mentors to me. And, of course, the BLVC, just going on there and be able to talk to everybody and seeing everything that's new and getting to show off my stuff. I really appreciate that forum.
Awesome, man. Well, we like having you
there. For having me, of course.
Pleasure having you on, and you've been a great contributor there too as well. So, listen, peace, God bless, and good luck. Talk to you soon, man.
Thank you, CK.
See you on the boards. Bye bye.